And then I heard these footsteps in my kitchen. I didn't dare move. I hardly dared breathe. Could have been me, couldn't it?
What is it, Paul?
Someone's hand. It's someone's hand.
She must have had a weak heart, poor old girl. I had to stop her screaming, but I didn't mean to kill the old girl. You know what it is when a woman screams.
Murder Most Foul. Six forensic murder cases presented by Nick Ross. Case 3, Hitchhike to Murder.
Are you going to London?
I won't be going to London till about 9 or 10 o'clock. I've got a load to drop off first.
That's all right.
Hop in then.
You don't mind the puppy?
No, not if you don't. Come on, get in.
Thanks very much.
You do much itching then?
Quite a lot. Usually lorries. You can never tell with car drivers. Know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
No self-respecting thriller writer would leave so many crucial elements to chance. But truth, in murder cases, is frequently much stranger than in fiction. Our case today is such a one. On the evening of the 31st of October, 1946, the Home Office pathologist, Keith Simpson, found himself at work in a thick shrubbery just off the A20 at West Malling, between London and the South Coast. Standing next to him was Detective Inspector Frank Smead of Kent CID. The inspector watched intently as the doctor examined the body of a middle-aged woman.
So how long has she been here, Doctor?
Well, she died by asphyxiation, and that in itself will have raised her body temperature by 4 to 6 degrees. So, working from that, I'd say she died this morning, about breakfast time. Yeah, between 7 and 9 this morning.
And she was definitely strangled.
Oh, yes. You see here? This is where the ligature was held. Unusually high on the neck, as a matter of fact.
Have you any idea what sort of thing was used?
Oh, not much. Some sort of hard cloth, I should think. Whatever it wasn't tied in any sort of knot. It was just held there very strongly for 15 to 20 seconds.
Not a nice way to go.
I don't know of any nice ways to go. She doesn't seem to have struggled very much. Those scratches there on her legs, they happened after her death. But I should be able to tell you a bit more when I get her back to the lab.
The Chief Constable of Kent called in a renowned detective, Robert Fabian, from Scotland Yard. As soon as Dr. Simpson had finished the post-mortem, Chief Inspector Fabian came to see him, accompanied by his assistant, Detective Sergeant Harry Rawlings.
And one shoe missing, and her coat was torn, and so were her stockings. Those sound like the sort of things that happen to a body when it's dragged along. Agreed, Doctor?
Agreed.
So I'd say she wasn't killed there. I'd say she was dragged there after she'd been killed.
My conclusion, too.
These scratches on her legs, could they have been done by barbed wire?
Certainly.
So she was strangled in some place unknown, then brought to that spot close to the road, then dumped. And she lay there until the lorry driver found her.
But there was no attempt to hide her, was there? So either whoever did it didn't care if she was found.
Or he panicked, which means it probably wasn't premeditated. And no signs of sexual interference?
None. In fact, she was still a virgin. Unmarried, or at least there aren't any signs of a wedding ring, as you can see.
Right. Anything more you can tell us, Doctor?
Just one thing. When she was strangled, she was probably in a sitting position. And I'm certain that for some time after she died, she was sitting upright.
And how do you make that out, Doctor?
Well, when the heart stops pumping, the blood simply settles in the lowest part.
By gravity?
That's right. The red corpuscles tend to settle first, and that's what gives that deep colour. Post-mortem hypostasis. Then, of course, the blood clots. Now, that gives a clear picture of the position the body was in the period immediately after death.
And it doesn't change even if the body's moved before we get to see it.
Ah, no, the clotting fixes it.
Good. So, sitting in an upright position.
I can actually be a bit more precise than that, if you like.
Carry on.
Well, whatever position the body is in, where it's actually making contact with whatever it's lying on, the corpuscles can't settle much there because of the weight of the body itself pressing at that point. But that will vary depending upon the precise type of surface that it's on. The softer the surface, the more the corpuscles will be able to settle there. The harder, the less so.
And what surface would you say she was on? She was sitting upright. She was brought here. A car seat?
Ah, no, I don't think so. If you look at the stains here, they'd be a deeper colour if she'd been sitting on a car seat. No, I'd say something less upholstered.
A lorry, then.
Yes, that would do it.
Harry, I've got a job for you.
The job for Sergeant Rawlings was to make sure that every lorry driver who'd used the A20 between 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. was questioned. There weren't so many lorries then as now, but it was still a Herculean task. Harry Rawlings got onto Scotland Yard, who in turn contacted every police station in England. Officers were asked to visit every lorry depot, every delivery firm, examining journey books, speaking to drivers, looking for anyone who travelled the A20 or any journey books that may have been amended. Meanwhile, the murder victim was identified. She lived locally and was named as Miss Dagmar Pechivalski, known as Miss Peters. Detective Chief Inspector Fabian visited her mother, who lived next door to her daughter's home.
She didn't have a lot of money, Mr. Fabian. Not a lot.
I know.
She'd left, you see, from the post office. But she didn't have a lot of money. But that's why she hitchhiked.
Oh, did she?
That's what she was doing on Monday. She went every week to see my daughter-in-law in London. Used to get up at 5 a.m.
And she definitely hitchhiked.
She put a note through the door. It just said, out. She always let me know when she was out so that I wouldn't worry.
And that meant she was hitchhiking to London.
I never liked her doing it. But there are so many people do it these days, aren't there? Soldiers and people. And she said it wasn't dangerous because she only hitched lorries. She never felt safe in a car. Well, with car drivers.
Oh, right. And would she have had anything with her?
Yes. She had a yellow string bag.
And what would have been in that?
Well, her purse, I suppose, yes. That was horseshoe-shaped. And her door key as well.
And could you tell me exactly what the bag looked like?
An ordinary string bag. It was crocheted. My other daughter-in-law, Elena, the one who lives in Woking, she made it for Dagmar. Oh, and she always took her little brown case, a sort of attaché case. She'd have her sandwiches in that. And she'd usually take a little present with her.
Anything else?
She didn't deserve this, Mr. Fabian. She really didn't.
I know.
Her puppy. She must have had her puppy with her. I bought it for her in Maidstone Market only last week, and I haven't seen it anywhere. She must have taken it with her. A little black and brown puppy, a mongrel, a present.
Photographs of a duplicate key and purse were published in the press, and 100 officers were set to combing the countryside close to where the body was found, searching for the missing items. Questioning of lorry drivers continued all over the country, but so far with no results. Now, Detective Chief Inspector Fabian travelled to Woking in Surrey.
Where to, Mrs. Peters?
The High Street, please. Left at the bottom. I'm pretty sure that's where I bought the wool.
And you'll be able to crochet a bag exactly like it?
Oh, yes, exactly. I've got the pattern in my head. Do you know what I'd do to him, Chief Inspector?
Left here, then?
Yes.
And how long do you think it would take to knit it?
Oh, I'll stay up all night till it's finished. It'll help catch the beast.
And that's exactly what she did. She stayed up all night and crocheted a bag identical to the one that she'd given her sister-in-law. The following day, a photograph of this too was in the papers. Fabian and his assistant Rawlings reviewed the progress so far, once more speaking with the pathologist, Keith Simpson.
Sir, what you said, Doctor, has been confirmed by the woman's mother. The murderer was almost certainly a lorry driver. We just haven't found him yet.
Mm.
And what we don't have, though, is a motive.
Yes, but do we necessarily need one? There are crimes committed without any motive.
No, without any apparent motive. If sometimes we never work out what the motive was, it doesn't mean there wasn't one. And there were no signs of struggle at all, Doctor?
Not of a severe struggle, no. There was a surface graze on the left cheek and a swollen left eyelid, but that's the sum of it.
She was obviously far too poor to be a robbery victim, and sex doesn't seem to have played a part, so...
Yeah, come in.
Excuse me, sir, but we've had a call to say the bag's been found.
Progress at last.
You were just in the middle of breakfast, weren't you, Peter?
Yeah.
And then he jumped up and he said that was the bag.
It was in Dad's paper. The photograph.
Yes, that's right. And then I said...
A minute, Mr. Nash. Peter, could you tell me exactly where you found it?
Well, in that corner of the lake, just there. It was a bit mucky, of course, but when I fished it out, well, it was exactly like the one in the photograph.
Which is why I told her that we had to go down to the police station.
Yes. But you gave the bag to a neighbour, you say?
Mrs. Essie, yes.
Yes, she did, just round the corner.
When was that?
Well, the same day I found it, 2 days ago. I thought she might like it.
No, sorry.
You mean you don't have it anymore?
Well, it was nice as a boy, but it's not my sort of thing, really. I gave it a good scrubbing, because it was in a bit of a state, then gave it to a friend. More her sort of taste. As a matter of fact, I didn't hold on to it.
You didn't?
No, I gave it a wash. Well, you never know where things have been, do you? Though it was a nice enough bag, and then I gave it to Edna Green, a friend of mine.
String bag?
Please.
Yes, I've got it. Come through. It's hanging out on the line.
So, thanks partly to a little luck, young Peter Nash just happened to fish the bag out of Clare Park Lake. A vital piece of evidence had now been found, despite having been passed on again, and yet again, all within the space of 48 hours. It was finally in the possession of the police. The bag was sent to the Metropolitan Police Laboratory, where the director was Dr. Holden.
The problem is the washing. There's almost nothing left on it.
Nothing at all?
Well, there are three hairs. Here, look. The brown and black one, I would say, was a dog hair.
Oh, she had a brown and black puppy.
Ah, right. And the other two are human. I've already examined the hair of the dead woman, and one of these hairs, that tiny one there, that belongs to her.
Which leaves us one which could belong to our murderer.
That's right.
Such a clue wouldn't lead to the murderer, but it might help confirm a suspicion if a suspect could be found. But then came disappointment. The third hair turned out to belong to one of the women who'd washed the bag. The police seemed stuck once more. Detective Chief Inspector Fabian and Detective Sergeant Rawlings were now staying at the Bull Hotel in Rootham and feeling rather disconsolate.
Yes?
Sorry, Governor. I couldn't sleep.
Nor I.
Do you know how many statements it is now?
Tell me.
It's just over 1,500. A few drivers see her hitching. Later, one sees a shoe on the road, and that's it. And what have we got? All right. The attaché case found near the road, but nothing in it and nothing on it. And a string bag cleaned of every possible clue. And no puppy. Not even a dead puppy. And it looks like it was done by someone who didn't know the victim, someone without any of the normal motives. So there's no point chasing that angle. So where do we go from here, Gov?
The bag. Now, what if we're asking the wrong questions about it? We're asking what clues we might find on it, and we're disappointed. But instead, what can it tell us simply by where it was found? Now, look, he strangles her. He dumps the body by the road. He throws out her attaché bag, probably the puppy as well. And he drives on over the downs. But no. He stops, takes the yellow string bag, marches across a field with it, climbs over an 8-foot fence and throws it into a lake. Why?
There was something in the bag, maybe, that he wanted to get rid of. Should be in the lake dredged.
I don't know.
Or does it mean he knew the area after all? He went specifically to that lake.
No, that doesn't sound right. Wait a minute. A lake. Now, where does that water come from?
Anywhere. Rainfall.
Or a stream. Now, what if the bag wasn't thrown into the lake at all, but was thrown into a stream which took it to the lake?
It's possible.
Let's find out.
So, the following day, the two officers asked where the lake was fed from. A local guide mistress was able to supply the answer.
Yes, the water comes from an underground stream.
And is there anywhere where the stream is above ground?
Oh, yes. At East Morling. It's the old mill stream there.
What sort of mill is that?
Nowadays, it's a cider works.
And it runs straight from there to here?
Yes. In fact, I'll tell you what we used to do as girls, and I think they probably still do. We used to put messages in bottles and drop them into the stream up by the mill, and then we'd go down to the lake and wait for them to come out.
And did they?
Oh, yes. It was great fun.
Thus it was that two grown-up policemen could be seen gently placing marked bottles into the stream next to the cider works. The pair were watched by some of the local children, but by now word had got round of what this was all about, and the children watched open-mouthed. Down at the lake, an hour later, the detectives saw the bottles reappear. Now Fabian decided to test this with the string bag itself, despite an obvious anxiety that this vital piece of evidence could disappear for good. After 3 hours of waiting, the anxiety was becoming unbearable. But then the bag at last surfaced and was once more recovered from the lake. The two men made their way back up to the cider works.
That's all very well, and yes, there's a good chance he dumped the bag here. But not a single journey book shows a delivery to the cider works on October the 29th.
Well, let's just take a wander around.
So ultimately, I'm not sure how far it's got us. If
he... Hey, those look new.
What's that?
The bricks. Excuse me.
Hello?
Detective Chief Inspector Fabian, Detective Sergeant Rawling, Scotland Yard.
Oh, what can I do for you?
Are those bricks there? Do you know when they arrived?
Those? Oh, those belong to a building subcontractor. Delivered the end of last month.
October the 29th.
Could have been.
But when officers came around previously, you said there hadn't been any deliveries to the works on that day.
There hadn't. Not to the works. That's to say, not to us. We were just going by our records. These were for the subcontractor, as I say. And as to exactly when they were delivered, well, they keep their own books. So you'll have to ask them.
The subcontractors weren't certain of the delivery date, but they said the haulage contractors would know, and they were in Cambridge. So off the two detectives went to visit Messrs. Dickerson in Cambridge.
Yes, we... Here we are. October 31st. Delivery of bricks to Goldwell Cider Mill, East Malling.
You're certain?
It's down here in black and white. Delivered in a 4-ton Albion lorry.
So why didn't you tell the police before?
I'm sorry?
Every haulage firm has been asked to produce journey records of October the 31st.
Not us.
And who was the driver?
Well, it was Sidney Sinclair.
Is he around? Could we speak to him?
I'm afraid not. He left the firm last week.
Fabian and Rawlings checked with the local police and discovered one of the failings of England's County Force divisions. The firm, Messrs. Dickerson, was right on the border between Cambridgeshire County Police and Cambridge City. The county men assumed the city men had visited the company, and the city men had left it to the county. Anyway, the important thing now was to speak to Mr. Sinclair. He was soon traced and asked to come in to Cambridge Police Station. As soon as Detective Chief Inspector Fabian saw him, something told him that Mr. Sinclair wasn't on the level.
You asked to see me? Yes. Well, do sit down. What did you say your name was?
It's, Sinclair.
Come on, how long has it been, Sinclair?
It's Hagger, Harold Hagger.
Ah. Well, Mr. Hagger, I'm making inquiries respecting a woman found murdered at Rootham Hill, Kent, on October the 31st. I understand you were on the road that day.
Yeah, I took the A20 and then I turned off to take a load of bricks to the cider works. But I don't know nothing about any woman being murdered.
I think I ought to tell you that a torn-up attaché case and a paper bag belonging to the dead woman were found in Winterfield Lane, along that route.
I found the attaché case, and I chucked it all away.
Now, why would you do that?
I got the wind up, didn't I?
Fabian checked police records. Harry Hagger had convictions for 16 offences, including an assault upon a woman. With his assistant Rawlings, Fabian took Hagger back to the scene of the crime and made him show them exactly where he'd thrown each item.
So, is that the lot then, Harry?
No, it ain't. If you just drive a bit further on. Over there, that's where I threw a vest.
Vest, Harry?
Yeah, a vest.
And where exactly did you throw it?
Just there. In the bushes, there.
Sergeant Rawlings.
Sir.
A job for you.
Sergeant Rawlings duly made his way into the undergrowth, and sure enough, he soon emerged with a man's woolen vest. Now Fabian went back to the dead woman's mother, who said that Dagmar may well have worn a vest around her neck as a cheap sort of scarf. The vest now had to be examined closely.
So what do you find, Doctor?
Well, there's a hair on it that belonged to Dagmar Peters.
Good. And was the vest used to strangle her?
Ah, now that's a little beyond my remit. What I can say, though, is that the texture of the cloth fits the ridge marks in the strangulation bruises.
Which is as near as you can come to say...
There's close compatibility.
All right. But if the vest was used to strangle her, and the vest was thrown in the bushes by Hagger, then the vest must have been taken off her after she died.
That makes sense.
I thought so.
Harry Hagger hadn't yet confessed to any criminal act. But little by little, the pressure must have been getting to him. On November the 23rd, at West Malling Police Station, he asked to see Detective Chief Inspector Fabian once more.
Hello, Harry. Well, come in.
I've hardly slept for a fortnight. I want to tell the truth.
Good.
Yeah, I've thought this business over all night, and I feel it's better for me to tell the truth about what happened. You see, I was driving along this road...
The A20?
Yeah, and I saw this woman on the offside, and she held up her hand for me to stop. I pulled in, and she said she wanted to go to London. I said I wouldn't be going back there till 10 or 11 o'clock because I've got to take some bricks into East Morling.
So did she get in?
Yeah. And she put her attache case on top of the engine cover. But then when we'd gone a little way, she asked me to pull into a turning. She said she wanted to talk to me.
What about?
She asked me if I'd got any money on me. So I said I always carry plenty of money about for me on this job. And she said she ain't got any money and she wanted to get some to get into London.
And did you give her any?
She asked me how much I've got on me. And I told her I got about £17.10 in my coat. But while she was talking to me, she must have been messing about with my jacket. And the next thing I saw was that she had me wallet in her hands and she was putting it down her dress. Down her dress!
So what did you do, Harry?
Well, I turned round to her and I told her, so that's your flipping game, is it? And with that, I hit her round the face. Well, then she started kicking and screaming. And as I went to get hold of her round the neck, something came away, which turned out to be a vest, which she must have been using as a scarf. With that, I went to pull the scarf, and I must have pulled it too hard. It's the next thing I knew. She ain't moving. And that frightened me. I shook her, and she just slumped down. In the struggle, she kicked the cab door open, and I got a bit panicky, and I closed the door, and I backed out onto the road and drove on towards East Morning. I went about halfway down the hill, then I stopped and got out. I lifted the body out of the cabin and carried it across the road and lay it down behind a hedge. Then I had to, didn't I? I delivered the bricks to the cider works and I threw away the bag and the gloves and the attaché case.
Tell me, Harry, where was the jacket?
Eh?
Your jacket? Where was it?
Hung up on a peg inside the cab of the lorry.
On a freezing cold October morning before dawn, you were driving in your shirt sleeves?
Well, Harry?
Harold Hagger, also known as Sidney Sinclair. You are charged with the murder of Dagmar Petchewalski on 31st October last. Harold Hagger, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
The case had come to trial at Kent Assizes. Harry Hagger's defence was presented by Mr. E. A. Morling. His basic case was that Hagger hadn't been in control of himself at the time of the killing. There was, after all, precious little motive that the prosecution could point to.
Chief Inspector Fabian, you have met many prisoners. How did this man strike you? Was he normal or abnormal?
At first, his whole demeanour was ordinary, but later he appeared to be frightened.
He served in the forces?
Yes, 2 years and 5 months. Mm.
Did you know he was discharged from the army after an examination by a specialist in psychological medicine?
I did not know that.
Would it surprise you to know that he is, in fact, suffering from the after effects of cerebral confusion?
No, it wouldn't surprise me.
Do you know that he suffers from hysteria?
No.
Deafness? Giddiness?
No.
Did you know that he jumped from a moving train at Carlisle some years ago?
Yes, in June 1925 or 1926.
Did you know he received a fracture of the skull and pelvis?
I did not know that.
And that he was in hospital for 20 days, and of that 20 days, he was unconscious for 14?
No.
Harry Hagger had certainly killed Dagmar Peters. That much had been established. That much he now admitted. The question was it murder? What exactly had happened in the cab? What led up to the assault? Why had it happened? Was Harry Hagger mad? For if he was, the verdict would have to be not guilty.
Do you find the accused Harold Hagger guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
On March the 18th, 1947, Harry Hagger was hanged in Wandsworth Prison. The black and brown puppy was never found.
In Hitchhike to Murder, Keith Drinkle played Dr. Keith Simpson and Barry J. Gordon played Detective Chief Inspector Fabian. Other parts were played by Julian Ryan Tutt, Sandra James Young, Dominic Letts, Gilly Mears, Diana Payan, John Evitz, Jill Lidston, and Jonathan Adams. Murder Most Foul was written by Rib Davis and presented by Nick Ross. The producer was Hilary McLennan.